Good morning. This is Dallas Townsend with the CBS World News Roundup. President Carter is about to commence a momentous journey to the Middle East. He leaves Andrews Air Force Base late today for a renewed, determined effort to bring about a peace treaty between Egypt and Israel. Tomorrow afternoon, he begins his talks in Cairo. On Saturday night, he's due in Jerusalem. CBS News White House correspondent Robert Pierpoint sums up Mr. Carter's position in advance of these crucial discussions.
The president does not have a deal as he departs today for the Middle East, according to administration sources, and so he is taking some risks. During their talks here, one of the main points the president made to Prime Minister Begin was the worsening situation in the Middle East, dramatized by the fall of the Shah's government in Iran. The United States is now more dependent than ever on oil from Saudi Arabia and other Arab nations, and less able to tilt toward Israel. All this may have helped convince Begin to accept some of Mr. Carter's new suggestions for solving old problems within the complicated Israeli-Egyptian peace treaty. When President Carter phoned Egypt's President Sadat with the news, Sadat was encouraged enough to invite the U.S. president over to work out a final settlement. Carter administration sources say that not all the details are yet settled. And in view of the highly volatile situation the president is dealing with, he is to some extent gambling. But given the falling polls at home, which many critics blame on his failing foreign policies abroad, the president had to act somewhere to show strong leadership, and the Middle East seemed to provide the best risk. Robert Pierpoint, CBS News at the White House.
Egypt's Prime Minister Mustafa Khalil said today in Cairo that the chances for peace are good. During their talks in Washington this past weekend, Mr. Carter and Prime Minister Begin discussed the possibility of a defense treaty between the United States and Israel. And we'll hear about that from Marvin Kalb.
American officials say that the president raised the subject in passing and that there was not a great deal of talk about it. But the fact that it was acknowledged the president raised it quickly aroused interest here, especially as the president makes ready to leave for the Middle East to conclude an Egypt-Israel peace treaty, if possible. A defense pact with Israel has always been an American option, as both sides neared final agreement and concessions became harder to get. But some sources caution that at this point, this is still not a serious option. More likely, they say, is another U.S. commitment to send sophisticated weapons to Israel to build up her military arsenal and her self-confidence at this critical point in the negotiation. Marvin Kalb, CBS News, the State Department.
Defense Secretary Harold Brown will accompany Mr. Carter to the Middle East, but CBS News Pentagon correspondent Ike Pappas quotes military sources as denying that this has anything to do with possible establishment of a U.S. Air Force base in the Sinai Desert. Administration officials do confirm that during those White House talks, Prime Minister Begin proposed to Mr. Carter that the United States take over one of the two air bases that the Israelis are turning over to Egypt in the Sinai under the Camp David Accords. But to do this, correspondent Pappas notes, the United States would have to win the agreement of President Sadat, and officials say that would be difficult. A splendid victory over China. That's what Hanoi this morning claims Vietnam has achieved in the border conflict. Peter Collins reports from Hong Kong.
Vietnam said it would allow Chinese troops to withdraw if they do not commit any acts of war during the pullout. An editorial in the Communist Party newspaper, Nhan Zan, said the Chinese invasion had, in its words, come a cropper. It said Vietnam would allow the withdrawal to proceed to show its goodwill for peace. Vietnam said yesterday it would begin negotiations with Peking as soon as all Chinese troops are back across the borderline between the two countries. Well-informed sources here in Hong Kong report there are very definite indications the Chinese are pulling back in an orderly manner, in some cases without taking along damaged equipment. They also report fighting has tapered off. But the sources say the Vietnamese are moving reinforcements to the northern front through Hanoi, so there is some question whether the disengagement will be entirely smooth. Peking has not reacted yet to Vietnam's offer to negotiate, and diplomats in the Chinese capital are noting the two sides are in dispute over what is the actual border and that the Chinese might not withdraw as far as Vietnam would like them to. Peter Collins, CBS News, Hong Kong.
This country's new ambassador to China, Leonard Woodcock, formally presented his credentials today at a ceremony in Peking. The Senate today begins debate on a resolution that calls for continuing, though unofficial, relations with Taiwan, and Phil Jones reports that the major issue will be Taiwan's security.
The Senate Foreign Relations Committee has already passed an amendment indicating an attack by mainland China on Taiwan would be viewed with grave concern by the United States. However, a few senators think this language is too soft. Republican Senator Charles Percy, for one, wants the language changed to say that such an attack would affect the national interest of the United States. And conservative Senator Jesse Helms will argue that what is needed is a forthright statement by the Congress that will give the people of Taiwan specific security guarantees. Helms will attempt to amend the legislation to state that Taiwan will get all-weather fighter planes, sufficient anti-ship weaponry, including anti-submarine warfare weapons, which he says would be critical to stop any amphibious assault on Taiwan or any attempted blockade of shipping to the island. However, the Helms amendments and other stronger measures are not expected to pass, since the prevailing sentiment in the Senate is in favor of normalization with Peking and against doing anything that might upset these new relations. Phil Jones, CBS News, Capitol Hill.
Administration sources quoted by the New York Times say a preliminary FBI report has turned up technical violations of banking laws in the administration of loans to President Carter's family peanut warehouse business in Georgia. Attorney General Griffin Bell says the Justice Department is studying the matter to determine whether a broader investigation, possibly including appointment of a special prosecutor, is needed. President Carter's brother Billy has been admitted to the Long Beach, California Naval Hospital for treatment of alcohol problems. The hospital says he went in voluntarily. Representatives of the two Koreas held another meeting today at Panmunjom, but Bruce Dunning reports that they didn't get anywhere.
The only common ground that the two delegations could find was that neither team of negotiators considers the other an acceptable partner for discussing reunification of Korea. So today's meeting was virtually a replay of the first get-together last month, much talk and no progress. The South insists on returning to government-to-government negotiating under the system the two Koreas agreed on 6.5 years ago. The North says this system broke down, and so a new approach is necessary. The North proposes organizing a giant all-Korea National Congress with representatives from all walks of life, including, especially, South Korea's suppressed political dissidents. The only new element in today's meeting was bitter denunciation by the North of Team Spirit 79, a series of joint training maneuvers involving about 140,000 Korean and American troops. The North calls this exercise an unbearable insult to the Korean people and a warlike provocation that, quote, reeks of gunpowder and threatens peace in Korea and the rest of Asia. Bruce Dunning, CBS News, Panmunjom.
Iran's new revolutionary government has announced the execution of 6 more men found guilty of moral offenses. That brings the total of such executions to 13. An inquiry by the Colorado Health Department into contamination has thus far turned up 19 contaminated sites where high levels of radiation have been detected. Harold Dow has details in Denver.
The locations include at least 2 tall office buildings, a brick company, parking lots, and some city streets. In some instances, contaminated materials were used in construction, and in others, construction took place on old dumps. Officials from the Environmental Protection Agency and the Department of Energy are involved in the effort to trace the potentially deadly trail of radium, which was produced in Colorado during the early 1900s and later buried at now long-forgotten radioactive dumps. For the rest of this week, a helicopter will be flying at low altitudes over Denver's residential, industrial, and downtown business areas. The helicopter will be equipped with some of the most sophisticated radiation detection devices in use today. State health officials are vigorously trying to get some idea of how big and widespread the problem really is. Sexton Chief for the Colorado Department of Health, James Montgomery, is concerned.
There are a lot of things we don't know about long-term effects, and obviously many of these people have already been there for a long period of time. For them to be there a few more weeks isn't really going to matter in terms of long-term exposure.
Montgomery says after the survey has been completed, he will begin conducting medical examinations on all of the people who have been working, in some cases for years, in areas where high levels of radiation exists. Harold Dow, CBS News, Denver.
An explosion and fire at a chemical plant in Crystal City, Texas today sent apparently toxic fumes over the area and caused a brief evacuation.